One of the many notable things about the American Civil War is how important railroads became to the war effort. One of the highlights of that aspect of the war was an actual chase, a pair of trains racing down a railroad track in Georgia. The great locomotive chase was remembered on film roughly 60 years later in the silent classic movie The General, named for one of the locomotives in the chase. Buster Keaton was star and director, and Cottage Grove, Oregon provided the surroundings. Now, the film returns to Cottage Grove and several other Oregon communities with new music to accompany it. The project features a new score by Portland composer Mark Orton, who's our guest on The Exchange. Hi, Mark.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Glad to be with you.
Tell us about you and the work you usually do. You have done film scores before, I guess.
Yeah. Last, I'd say seven years, I'm pretty much full-time with it. I had a concert career first. Had a band called Tin Hat Trio. It was kind of a fine arts center group, instrumental trio. We would cross over into vocal music once in a while, but that group was finding itself licensed, its music licensed into film a lot. And I had a background of having done orchestral stuff. And just basically over time, I naturally evolved towards not just licensing music to film, but scoring it directly. And, you know, I work on a combination of projects, things, some documentaries, some independent films, and some, you know, bigger features, things like Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Now a couple of years ago, Fernando Morales, The City of God, Guy Brazil. I'm working on European films. I even worked on a Oregon-based Leica's Box Trolls animated film.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do a fair amount of doc work, as I said, and worked on Ken Burns' The Roosevelts. It's just sort of it's a bit of a mishmash, and that's kind of on purpose. It keeps it interesting for me. I do some work even for radio, doing some work for This American Life. My music can be heard on there a lot.
All kinds of great stuff. It's interesting, though, that your movie was your work, your music was getting licensed for films before you began to compose directly for films.
Yeah, I think that, you know, my group came out of the New York avant-garde scene, honestly. In fact, I was in my early 20s, I was an engineer and was one of the head engineers at the Knitting Factory in New York, so working with Phil Frizzell and John Zorn and Laurie Anderson, that crew. And my group actually did really come out of that, but at the same time, even when we were sort of at our most avant-garde and improvisatory, there was always a strong, like, thematic and lyrical component to what we did. We were into melodies, and I think that what we were doing suited film well, and yeah, so it found a home there.
How different is it to score for a film, though? Because you have to. It's not like somebody just picks up your music and plunks it onto the soundtrack. In this case, since you're composing for film, you're trying to make sure that the music keeps up with what's going on the screen.
Yeah, sure. And that's the task. I mean, it's following the narrative and supporting it, and in the case of non-silent films, staying out of the way of dialogue or supporting dialogue.
Right, not a good place to have all the violins going dun 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 when people are trying to talk.
Yeah, depending on the film, and if there's a killer on the loose, then maybe it's the right spot. But
right. So how different is it then for this project, though? I mean, doing a new score for an old work.
Yeah. So I've done a little bit of this work before. The trio that I mentioned, Tin Hat, we toured pretty extensively for a couple of years as a trio, and then with a fourth person, Zena Parkins, usually who is best known. She plays with Bjork, the harpist, and she's sort of one of our several fifth Beatles. we went on the road with it with Ladislav Starovich's animations. These are also really early stop-motion animation film silence from as early as 1908, actually, the stuff we worked with. So I'd had some experience doing this, although these were shorter-form films. But it's a different, you know, it's a different calculus when you're working with silent film. It's you have a lot more flexibility on the one hand. Just as I was saying, you know, you're not fighting dialogue. You can get away with a lot more thematic development. You are the entire soundscape. You're not working in or around sound design or, you know, explosions. You are the explosions if you want to be in the general. You certainly are the cannon shots and battle scenes.
You definitely need some good percussion then, for sure.
Yes, and we do have that. But yeah, it's a different calculus. It's also you have more of a responsibility as well, because you really are the whole sound palette, and you know, you could really make or break the narrative of the film if you don't give it its proper due. So
Mark Orton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a composer and musician based in the Portland area, and he has composed a new score for the 90-year-old film The General. And the film and musicians and score going on the road with a couple of stops, including in Cottage Grove on Saturday evening for an outdoor screening in Bohemia Park. Cottage Grove is where The General was filmed with Buster Keaton 90 years ago. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore what's going on with Mark. 800-838-3760 over the phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. So I've never understood. I mean, music was performed live along with silent films back in the heyday of the silence, but there was a specific score for each film then?
No.
Really?
Most of the time it was improvised, actually. And there are still people that do that today. And I think actually, I mean, that's also part of the reason I chose the ensemble that I did. And I think part of the reason that Tin Hat was well suited, to doing it earlier. We were a collective of, composer improvisers. There's having the flexibility to be able to read off the page, to be able to improvise along with picture and, you know, build accents into your playing that are specifically with picture. It really makes a huge difference with a silent film. I think that your other alternative is really being locked into some kind of click track, or having a conductor that intimately knows the film and can adjust tempos so that you can hit various elements. We joke around about this kind of golf analogy, this idea that, you know, when you do something a little bit wrong in golf, 250 yards later, it's really wrong. And
yeah.
And it's the same thing with silent film. You start a musical cue, and your tempo is just slightly off. And 5 minutes later into that cue, you're way off. You're way off the action. If you're trying to hit a moment where Buster is slamming a railroad tie down onto another one, clearing the track, or cannon fire, or some other event in the film, it's you know, it's near impossible, again, without having some kind of click track running that was locking you into it. So anyway, having improvisers that can kind of play both on the page and off the page, this has always been, I think, like a real asset to working with silent film.
So having people you know with you really, really helps, it sounds like.
Yeah, I basically built this ensemble. I brought out Carla Kilstead, great violinist who was in Tin Hat with me. She founded it with me. And her husband Matthias, who is a percussionist and Foley guy. And those two are the out of towners. And then I also have a bassist, who's a recent Oregonian, moved to Eugene, about a year ago, named Todd Sikafoos. He's best known for working with like Andrew Bird and Ani DiFranco. But great jazz player as well. So as the quartet there, including myself, we're sort of the core ensemble that can play both on and off the page and adjust and shift things around if we get excited and take a tempo too fast or whatever. Then I also have several string players from the Oregon Symphony. These are guys that I've used on a lot of my soundtracks. So they round out the ensemble with the string trio.
So to look at that, the way things are getting divided up here, so you play guitar, banjo, and pump organ, it sounds like, in this group, Carl?
Yeah, actually, you know, I do reed organ stuff on the score, mm-hmm. And on the tour, actually, we're not finding a use for it. I'm bringing a bunch of other things instead. I collect a lot of antique instruments, many that are from the era of this film. Either its production or the Civil War. So we are bringing a bunch of that stuff on the road, but it's more in the way of like banjos, dobros and then oddities, marxophones and old harmonicas and things.
I think you just answered my next question, both. I was going to ask you which period you were going for, whether you're going for the 1920s in which the movie was made or for the 1860s in which the events took place. And it sounds like both.
Yeah, both and then other, I would say. you know, I wanted to make a nod to both of those things, like this, the era of silent film. There is some ragtime kind of stuff in it and some stuff that harkens back to the music that I associate with those years. And then, yes, there is definitely Civil War. You know, it's funny, I've been talking with my composer friends here about writing music that, you know, channeling the Battle Hymn of the Republic as opposed to Ennio Morricone's spaghetti western score. And
like a good, bad, the ugly.
Yeah, there's a fine line, it turns out, thematically, at least in my brain, so I've had to be careful not to shift towards that version of drama. But yeah, we've definitely, I mean, that stuff is in there. At the same time, you know, there's music in there that's certainly more contemporary as well.
Wow, I would love to hear that mashup. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord off into wah, wah, wah. Good stuff. We haven't given the audience a taste yet, and there is a little bit to offer here from a clip you guys put up on YouTube. So here's a little bit of the music you composed for the 90th anniversary of The General. Certainly get a sense of a chase scene going on there. I have to ask, though, I mean, when you're talking about trying to keep up in sync with the movie, I mean, how many times have you seen The General now, Mark?
I've seen it many, many times. And actually, I should say that my while I'd probably seen Buster's films back in the day, I got close to them, I got intimate with them, again, back in my early 20s when I was a sound engineer, Bill Frisell. I mixed Bill on the road, and he toured for a year or so with Buster Keaton films, not The General, but several of his other films, Go West and Sherlock Jr. The difference with this film, honestly, though, is that it's a major feature. I mean, it's 75 minutes, and yeah, there are chase scenes. I mean, the device I use, they basically, there's a train chase over the Mason-Dixon line heading north first, and then they turn the trains around and have a big train chase south. And I explore some of the same themes sort of in variation going south and then returning north.
There's a great bit of history. Have you been to Cottage Grove? I mean, you're going there.
I have.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done a great job of preserving the sites there. And yeah, there's all kinds of markers and stuff around. So
yeah, the railroad itself, the old Oregon Pacific and Eastern, has become a biking trail now, which takes you up into the mountains, which is a lot of fun to ride on. Mm-hmm. But there was also, they built a bridge and actually destroyed it with the locomotive falling into the river and everything. Not that I'm giving away the ending of the film, that's unknown, but
no.
So was that like the most interesting part of the film to score too?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the great spots. I think that. For me, I'm also such a fan. I mean, in some ways, this is a more dynamic film for Keaton. There's a lot of just sort of straight up drama in it. It's not just slapstick, and it actually wasn't. It's become known as one of the greatest films of all time, and picked as such. But it, you know, at the time that it was released, it wasn't that well received. He actually kind of got in trouble for it. It had a monstrous budget. They describe it as a Terminator-like budget, and including a lot of it was based around the fact. I mean, they had hundreds and hundreds of Oregon Guard folks that were acting as extras in these war scenes, and actually they multi-purposed them. So in the beginning, they dressed them as the North crossing the river, and then they put them into different outfits, and then they crossed from the other side as the South, and then intercut these things back and forth. But yeah, wrecking this train into the river, I think the train actually sat there for 20 or 25 years after the wreck. I mean, this is major special effects for this time.
I remember reading that too, that given the environmental ethic at the time, I was like, it'll be fine in the river, and then you finally went back and got it a couple decades later.
But back to quickly with your question, I would say that, you know, for me, working with his humor, which especially his deadpan I find just endlessly fascinating. And I work on a lot of movies where I'm just watching, you as a composer, you watch it hundreds of times or 100 times. And this is a movie that never disappoints. It basically just keeps rewarding you the more you watch. There's incredible depth to his humor and the special effects and stunts that he's doing, which he's doing all himself. He's famous for that. You know, they're really mind-boggling.
They truly are. Buster Keaton himself, known as the Great Stone Face, hence the reference to the deadpan there. I have not asked how this project came about. How did looks like Hollywood Theater is behind this all.
Yeah, Hollywood Theater, Oregon Film, and then Buster Keaton folks down in Cottage Grove helped put it together. It's the 90th anniversary of the film. It's also coincidentally the 90th anniversary of the Hollywood Theater. And so they and Oregon Film went after a grant rather than using an improviser or, you know, an organ or piano score to write a new score for the film. And we're actually releasing it on DVD as well. I should mention, too, before we get to the end of the hour, that I think this is down in your area. We're also playing out on the coast in Coos Bay.
On Sunday.
Our other Southern Oregon gig. That's at the Egyptian Theater on the 14th, I think.
Yes, on the 14th. And we also talked to Klamath Falls, and you'll be at the Ross Ragland Theater there next Wednesday. So this is quite an ambitious tour of the General with your new score.
Well, it's fun for me because I honestly, for all the years that I've lived in Portland and also toured the Northwest, we pretty much play Portland and maybe Eugene, and that's it. So it's nice to get out to some other places, too.
The General, a 90-year-old classic film from Buster Keaton about a locomotive chase in the Civil War, back on the big screen in a couple of locations in Oregon with a new score played live by Mark Orton and his friends. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Take care.